Lamborghini across the podcast. I'm Todd, along with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm doing good. Feeling better. My act this weekend.
Yep.
Had a nice little ginger ale, some leftover ice cream. You know, that's not going to cause a problem.
No. I hope you're well.
Listen, I'm as well as can be, right? I'll make this joke here, of course. So today, in my spare time, I watched the HBO Alex Jones thing.
Oh boy!
I watched the Bray Wyatt documentary on the WWE thing, right? Okay. And then to pick myself up, I decided to watch the documentary The Bridge before we started recording.
I hear that's a heartwarming special. It's about them building a bridge, right?
Something going on at the bridge.
Okay. Just not give you... cargo ships involved, are there?
No. Oh, my goodness. Too soon. Just to tell you how uplifting my day's been.
Oh, boy. Sounds like fun.
But it was all worth it because I knew we'd be recording the podcast. Todd, what do we have to cover on the show this week?
In news, Infinity Inc. done right, Joe. Creator credits and what that entails. An update on Gail Simone's doings with X-Men and another upcoming project. Notorious Story may finally be getting published. And sadly, we will be eulogizing the late, great artist M.D. Bright. Conventions. What we read last week, which was New Burn 16 and Zorro Man of the Dead, number 3. What we're looking forward to this week, Todd and Joe Have Issues, where we reread Gail Simone's Secret Six in its entirety, and we take a short detour over to Birds of Prey, number 104 for an arc. And at the end, TV talk of Godzilla multiplied by Kong, the new empire.
All right. I like that you did your algebra symbols there, you know?
Ooh, and you know what I did forget, Joe? Our walk down Lois Lane will also be in there somewhere. It won't be the regular stuff, but I think Becky's going to talk about a nurse, even though she doesn't play one on TV.
Gotcha. I don't think she's on TV neither. No. So let's get into the news. Todd had mentioned up front, of course, that there is a new book coming from a fan favorite creator of us, Jeremy Adams, with art by Travis Mercer. He has been showing some sketches online of some of the characters, teasing that they're going to be doing some sort of project together. Looks like we got Stephanie Brown's spoiler. Looks like we got the new old Kid Flash that was in Jeremy Adams' Jay Garrick book.
Mm-hmm.
We got some of the Wally West kids in there. We got the new Fair Play kid and so on and so forth, right?
Right.
A lot of teasing, nothing for sure, but I like this sort of, you know, you would sort of get this sort of thing maybe in an annual or like some sort of printed material. I like to see creators teasing a project coming up online. Get you hyped up for something like this before they're able to officially announce it.
Right.
And I definitely think that the delays in Geoff Johns' JSA is delaying this getting officially announced.
Right.
But I really like, I'm not familiar with Travis Mercer's stuff, but I really enjoy the design work that he's showing on this. And we've been really enjoying Jeremy Adams' stuff, so I am here for it.
I agree. I'm a Jeremy Adams fan, like, you know, from The Flash, like you said. And this looks fun. I do like a teen book, especially like now that the Titans are no longer teenagers. This kind of like fills that gap. So I think it should be interesting. I'm definitely, you know, first day getting issue one.
For sure. So again, it's one of those things that you just got to put a little pin in. Hopefully it gets announced sometime soon, maybe, you know, we get an idea of when and where and how, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be cool. Speaking of over at DC, they did just recently announce that they are going to be doing a Swamp Thing omnibus of the Mark Miller stuff.
Right.
And
this is the Rick Veitch stuff, I believe.
Right. So the Rick Veitch stuff would technically be next if they're, you know, doing omnibuses, absolutes, whatever DC does of these sort of things. So it's solicited to come out maybe in August. But this run by Rick Veitch is very notorious because there was an issue that he had wrote and submitted and it was getting ready to go to press. And then all of a sudden they put one of those standby issues in its place, didn't they? Or did they just skip the month and go forward, right?
No, they finished the story. I wasn't buying this book at the time, but I got this later because Rick Veitch in order, slightly wrong. It goes Alan Moore, Rick Veitch. Rick Veitch goes into Bob Wheeler. Bob Wheeler goes into Nancy Collins. Nancy Collins, Grant Morrison, and Mark Millar to the end.
Gotcha. But, thank you.
So that's big shoes to fill after Alan Moore. But he does a great job. And then he does that story where Swamp Thing's – this famous story where Swamp Thing's going back in time. Last issue doesn't get published because – doesn't get published as he wrote it because there was – they censored it or whatever he said. So I think – Doug Wheeler finished the story his way and then took over the book. So the story was finished, but not the way Rick had envisioned, if you will.
Right. Because doesn't Swamp Thing go and have a little adventure with Jesus?
Right. I was under the misunderstanding all these years of the way it was, and there's nothing in the explanation of the story. See, I always thought he was maybe the wood that, when he meets Jesus Christ, if you get my meaning. But there is something with that. And Rick was like, I'll change the names. And that wasn't good enough. Like, there's no way we're having Jesus meet Swamp Thing. And he's like, all right, I'll never work for DC again. Thank you. And goodbye. And he walked away. And it wasn't till like decade and a half later he'd work again. I think he did like a Question miniseries, which shocked me. He may have done something before that, but he said he'd never work for them again.
Right. So on his Facebook, again, it's interesting to see what creators use what social media platforms, right?
Yep.
Rick Veitch put up, thanks to all posted love and support for the newly announced DC collection of Swamp Thing stuff. If you lost track of me back in the late 80s because of the Swamp Thing Jesus kerfuffle, know that I've been active and productive, cranking out comics outside the mainstream like a runaway locomotive. And then he gives some examples of some of the other stuff that he does, King Hell Heroica, True Man the Max Immortal, etc. And then he adds, so I'm told that a Gmail account has been set up to collect opinions on whether or not DC should publish Swamp Thing 88 as he wrote it. And these will be read by the folks at DC. So if you have an opinion, let them know at publishswampthing88@gmail.com. I don't see why it shouldn't be.
The world is a different place so many years later, Joe. I think, people wouldn't even care now.
And again, I have like seven other stories, maybe one related to this a little bit later on in the show. I'm kind of torn because I think depending on how things are presented and so on and so forth, but I do like that DC editorial, Warner, whoever is actually let's hope that they're taking this seriously. They set up an email account. They don't just give those out for free, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, that'll be interesting. The Rick Veitch Swamp Thing era is definitely one that I am not familiar with, but I am familiar with this story, of course. It was kind of notorious.
Yes, it was.
I wasn't reading comics, I think, when this came out, but it was definitely one of those things. We talked last week about that site, the Brian Cronin site, the comic book Urban Legends Revealed sort of thing, and this was like one of the top stories that was discussed there,
I was... buying when, this was even before, like I said, my time of reading Swamp Thing, but I went back and got it. And it was a flop ending to the story because it wasn't, and like the story was brilliant, then it wasn't any good at the end. And this is one of those that I only buy the Swamp Thing absolutes, the Alan Moore ones. And I don't even know if they ever really reprinted a lot of the Veitch stuff. But because they, if they do this story in this and it's like guaranteed, this is one that I would just maybe pick up because there's no other way that it's ever been reprinted. And I would be sad if they reprinted a cheaper version down the line just to read it. But I don't know. I think I might get this one if everything shakes out the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So some of the other news, we actually did get some news from the conventions this past weekend at WonderCon.
Right.
Gail Simone was there, and she was talking about what project she has upcoming in 2024. And, you know, we're fans of Gail, of course. We're talking about her Secret Six run in Todd and Joe F. Issues, one of our favorite creators, one of our favorite runs. If only there was enough issues of her Red Sonja run, that would have been in the running to do a full year reread through as well.
Yep.
But she did announce that with 2000 AD Publishing, they're going to be doing a horror one-shot revitalizing a 70s horror comic from the UK called Misty. Mm-hmm. And Gail Simone is going to be one of the writers on it. She and someone by the name of Lefty Wilson, someone who I'm unfamiliar with. But it appears to be all female creators on the book, from artists to covers to everything else like that. Sign me up. I don't know, like, if Gail's putting it out, I'm getting it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm going to give it a try. I mean, we're big fans. I don't know what Misty is, but that doesn't stop me from not knowing things doesn't stop me from trying stuff a creator I really, really like is done. So definitely going to give it a chance.
One of these days, and again, maybe as we continue to grease the wheels here a little bit, maybe I will get my answer of that Dark Horse book that was solicited all those years ago, or that she had teased all those years ago.
Yep.
Where is it? I don't want to.
Somebody was asking me about that the other day, and I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I'll have to check that that X post that Joe put out years ago."
Yeah, I'll have to track that one down. But Gail also stated that with her upcoming Uncanny X-Men run, the first year is going to be 18 issues. So we're going to double up some things like old school. Remember back in the day, like when Marvel would do that for like their bet, like it would be amazing. It'd be like an X book. It'd be something else where it'd be twice monthly for like the summer or whatever it was.
Right. However, if they did it, like the first month was two issues and the second month was one issue and then the third month was two issues. Mm. Somehow they would work that schedule.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Or every 3 weeks sometimes it would come out. I think that's like the way it worked.
Yeah. But Gail also stated that her book, now again, I don't know if there's going to be all the X books, but she did say that her X book is going to have a letters page as well.
That's right.
Remember when DC brought back letters pages for like 2 months?
Yeah. Do you remember they had a big ad with artwork from it and everything?
That was a nice ad. Artwork in that ad.
I can't believe that art got the letters page canceled.
Ah, listen. He could be worse. He could be drawing Cable and Deadpool, you know?
Right. And then, you know, or hold the line at whatever price, you know?
Yeah. $2.99. Oh, listen, that's his fault too, I guess.
That was a different time.
But I don't, you know, listen, 18 issues, the letters page. I was going to say, though, I remember, when we get to it, we get to it. But during the time when the letters pages was back, it was when Gail was on Secret Six. And I think I got a letter in Secret Six.
Ah, I didn't write too many letters after my Flash, Why Are You So Grumpy letter. So.
Well, it was just an email. It was like, you know, email us. Like
a different time. Different method. Easier. Much, much easier. But, Joe, there was a time when I didn't think I would buy 12 issues of X-Men a year, and now I'm going to be buying 18 of them?
And some weird British horror comic?
All right, British stuff, that's far superior, so I'm okay with that.
No, I have faith. We're just joking around and saying, like, it's interesting to see Gail getting out there and kind of really beating the feet and promoting and pushing this. You know, it's a big deal. It's Uncanny X-Men. This is the flagship title, you know?
Right. One of the biggest titles at the time for years, you know?
Yeah. So we'll be supporting it. We'll be talking about it First issue comes out, you know, 4 months from now. So again, a lot of talking, a lot of speculating, a lot of everything else, you know?
Yep.
So another story that came up through Marvel, I guess, and, you know, this kind of gets, you know, I don't know how these things kind of get handled, right? But we're going to talk about it because it was a lot of discussion over the last week. And apparently with the upcoming Wolverine X-Men movie stuff, like, you Deadpool. Know, Deadpool, Wolverine, Deadpool. Thank you.
Yep.
Deadpool, Wolverine, Wolverine, Deadpool. And a lot of the promotional stuff that's already getting like pre out there. Roy Thomas is being credited as a co-creator of Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Roy Thomas was the editor on Hulk at the time that Wolverine was in the book. And he had never had or was never attributed co-creator status of Wolverine until after Len Wein passed away. So it's interesting to see moves like this taking place. Now, listen, an editor does have a very big part in a book getting made and so forth like that. But if this is going to be something new that's going to happen going forward, I would assume this is something that should or would need to be cleared with the creators themselves, like the writer and the artist and so forth. And,
right.
You know, I bring it up, of course, because Mark Waid was talking about it quite a bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Tom Brevoort of Marvel were going kind of back and forth about it, you know.
Right.
And I think even, like, Kurt Busiek was posting about it. But it gets to be just like a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, because I saw people like Jimmy Palmiotti talk about it. He's like, well, if in that case, he's like, there's a lot of stuff as co-editor and stuff like that on the Marvel Knights stuff. I don't know. Here's the way I look at it. If you could give money to that person without taking any money out of the original guy's pockets, I'm fine with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, but if, like, say everybody gets X amount of the big percentage of the pie for what you sell. But if it's like, okay, you keep adding people on. So now you have, there's, say you get 1% of Wolverine, just to make things easy. Now 100% of that Wolverine money goes 50% to the writer, 50% to the artist. But now you start adding people. So it's 33 and a third. Then it's 25% because there's four people, and I'm like, I don't know if that makes any sense. But if you can give up, if you can give more people money without taking away from other people, and you're only taking it from the rich movie executives, I'm fine with it. But it probably does not work that way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it definitely feels as though most of the modern creators, and I say modern creators, I say that as guys and girls that have been doing stuff for the last like 30-40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of fall in the line of, you know, maybe the editors shouldn't get the credit. And I think a lot of this might be the way that it was all being done, where after Len Wein had passed and then the estate of Roy Thomas was going and editing Wikipedia pages.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of, you know, a little, it feels a little shady, but again, who am I to say? I don't know if this was something that was approved by Marvel, Disney, et cetera, et cetera. But the one thing that I will mention is, you know, we talk about the different creators saying stuff, you know, Kurt Busiek, Tom Brevoort, Mark Waid, Neil Gaiman specifically cited that he says, I picked the civilian name and gave the current origin to Poison Ivy, but that does not make me the co-creator.
Mm-hmm.
I just changed what was there, right? Now, mm-hmm. granted, the version, you know, the name Pamela Isley and her current origin is like the more commonly referred to and known one, but it wasn't a wholly created thing. And he's like, that was Bob Kaniger and Carmine Infantino. They're Poison Ivy's creators.
Right. If
what I did changes the character completely, unless I decide to not use that idea for Poison Ivy and create my own Poison Ivy called something else, and I publish it myself, and I so on and so forth, all I'm doing is changing an existing IP.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a bad argument, though, Joe.
I'm just saying that's Neil Gaiman saying that.
Right. That's all. I'm not doing it. I'll talk to you after the show.
All right. I'm writing that one down. Mm-hmm. Last but not least, just this over the weekend, we were informed that comic book artist M.D. Bright, Mark Bright, passed away, age 68. One of the seminal comic artists of the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he was someone whose art was not only amazing, but he was almost like a chameleon. As announcement of his art came, people were, putting out some of like his more well-known stuff, and you put this stuff together and you're like, oh, okay. Like some of the stuff, like if you match up like his Quantum and Woody stuff to his Black Panther stuff, I could see lines where it's similar.
Mm-hmm.
But then they were showing like he did like stuff with Armor Wars. He did Emerald Dawn over at DC for Green Lantern. He was a co-creator of some of the Milestone stuff that we cover over in Previewing the Past, right?
Right.
But there's one in particular, I don't know if you saw it. He did a cover for one of the issues of Transformers, and it's Soundwave on it.
Okay.
And it says, All Autobots Must Die. And it's one of the most visually striking covers that I've ever seen in my entire life. It's iconic for the Transformers comic.
Right.
And I never knew it was M.D. Bright who did it.
That one, I can understand why it would be hard to tell because, he's probably trying to get to the close as the cartoon looks, you know what I mean? So your style doesn't bleed through. I agree with you. I know the cover. I'm looking at it right now. It's a great, what was his name was Shockwave, right?
Yeah, Shockwave.
Shockwave, just an amazing, piece with Shockwave. That being said, I think that's the only thing I would disagree. I could pick out M.D. Bright's art immediately, and I was a big Emerald Dawn fan when he did Green Lantern. He did the Green Lantern story when Action Comics was weekly. I don't know. I just think all his stuff, and when I say looks alike, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just think his style just jumps out to me. And I was a big fan of M.D. Bright from the Green Lanterns, and then later on into the creating Quantum and Woody, man. Like, just one of the greatest, funniest comic books I've ever read. And I always loved his stuff. And I ended up managing to find a Quantum and Woody page with both Quantum and Woody on it. So that always made me happy. I always wanted to get something from him, and he did commissions, but I never pulled the trigger on getting a Quantum and Woody sketch. But I should have. Too late now, though.
Yeah. Again, obviously you have a little bit better eye for art than I do. I will freely admit that, luckily you've turned in your art badge, your art collecting badge, as it were. I know he hasn't been very active, in regular comics, the last couple years. I think, what did I see that he was doing, like design work for like Hollywood stuff?
That's what I heard too, yes.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. But again, it doesn't seem like it was anything tragic. Anytime anyone passes, of course, is a tragedy. But go check out some of the comics of the 80s and 90s that he did. I think you'll be... I think I might be able to convince you my way that his art kind of is really good in a way that, it kind of fits the character of the book.
Right.
Or fits whatever it is. But, Todd has the better eye than I do.
I'm just saying, that's all. I don't know.
Yeah. So conventions this weekend. It's a light weekend because everyone knows you don't run against WrestleMania.
Mm. You run away from WrestleMania.
Well, there's nothing much to run away to. The only con of note this weekend is the King Con comic show in Park Ridge, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
It's a one-dayer. Smaller convention, free admission. Saw folks like Klaus Janson and Lee Weeks are going to be there.
Okay.
Those are some great 80s, 90s comic artists as well. Pre-image stuff, still doing stuff to this day. Lee Weeks, as I know. So if you're in the area and you're not a WrestleManiac like myself, definitely go check that out, I say.
I agree.
And all of the links to the convention, of course, in the show notes, along with information about the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Anytime any of the shows go live in the network, you could certainly find them, of course, through your podcatcher of choice, through their individual websites. But, of course, one-stop shop for all the shows, that's at soon-to-be-named-network.com. And that includes, of course, this show. That includes Long Box Heroes After Dark. That includes Final Wrestling Place, We Need Wrestling, Add-Outs with Wrestling, Puzzle Warriors 3, Profane Arguments, Wings on Wings, Porch Talk returning, if it stops raining, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe. And while Hayabusa is dead, I may have a line on getting the Lost episode, but I'll just be keeping that for myself. But young Ed told me he has a new project that he's working on, and if and when that comes to fruition, you could certainly find it over at soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com.
Ooh, I'm counting the seconds.
Some of the other places you can check out our friends and stuff that they're up to in and around the internet, of course. You can go check out Mike Sterling's blog over at ProgressiveRuin.com. You can go check out our friend Kevin at his blog, HellionsTeam.com. You can go check out Rick Williams, the Chop Shop, at FreeKarateChops.StoreEnvy.com. You can check out Jason Sandberg's self-published Jupiter over at his Indiegogo, and you could buy just the book or buy all the accoutrements that came along with it. You can also go check out Chris Runt's Battle Monsters, his own self-published comic, over at FortressOfComicNews.com. Our good friend Davey of the band Cave People has his own self-published stuff over at CaveDomainComics.com. And Davey did tweet out just the other day that there's only 14 print copies of the first run of Keeper left.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't got it, get it now before, you know, maybe it'll help him fund a second print of Mending or Hands. But you can certainly get those digitally, right?
Yep.
And he also said he might be working on something else new coming out later this year.
Right. And all those all the money he makes probably goes to new tattoos, Joe.
I think he wants to be known more for his music and his comics.
Possibly.
Okay. And we get into a little bit more depth over on After Dark this week. But they're doing a documentary about the making of Megaforce. And they're doing a crowdfunding thing for it. And we got that linked up in the show notes. If that's something that interests you, by all means. And if you want to be convinced, wait until After Dark comes out this week.
The hard sell.
The hardest of hard sells.
Yep.
But of course, if you do not have a comic book shop in your area, or you do not have a good comic book shop in your area, let our comic shop be your comic shop, Comics on the Green. We have the Facebook page linked up anytime the books come in. Soon I won't be able to say Tuesday and Wednesday, because it'll just be back to Wednesday by the summer, right?
Yep.
If there's any delays for any reasons, you can find out there before you make the trek out to the store. But of course, you can always sign up for their mail order subscription service. You can get your books mailed to you weekly, biweekly, or monthly. And if you do, there's a chance that you can get a sketch on the package from our good friend Becky, who we're going to turn things over to now for her walk down Lois Lane.
Welcome back. Are you sick of hearing me talk about Lois? Are you into solving crimes while working on your night shift? Do you like hot doctors and cute nurses? Well, stick around and I'll tell you about today's comic. In 1961, Marvel ran 9 issues of a comic called Linda Carter, Student Nurse. It was about a brunette doctor's daughter from Allentown, PA, who chose her career over choosing a husband. I read issue 1. It's a comedy and it's cute, but it's not wacky enough or ridiculous enough for my personal liking. Issue 1 also had paper dolls submitted by readers, so those were either fake readers, or they sent advanced copies to some diehard letter writers, which was a common practice at the time. The comic wasn't an overnight hit and really isn't anything to write home about, but honestly, that's because there was a lot of nurse and romance comics at the time. Stan Lee and Roy Thomas did revisit the idea in 1971. They had Claws of the Cat and Shanna the She-Devil, but wanted more comics for girls. Roy suggested if they were going to make girl comics, they should be written by girls, and he was right, honestly. So, Night Nurse was born. It ran for 4 issues and was written by Jean Thomas, that's Roy's wife. In it, Linda Carter, now a blonde, worked with Christine Palmer and Georgia Jenkins, still choosing career over marriage, but having people arrested for hit and runs and drug smuggling. There were no superheroes, but it was still full of drama, danger, and death. Unfortunately, the comic didn't sell. And Jean admitted that while they tried to appeal to female readers who liked stories like Nancy Drew and had the women foiling bomb plots and confronting hitmen, it really didn't appeal to boys because there wasn't enough superhero male-oriented butt-kicking action. They were gone for a while, but Linda Carter reappeared in Daredevil 58 from 2004. Daredevil refers to her as a night nurse, someone who is sympathetic to costumed heroes. Christine Palmer reappears as a night nurse in 2004's Nightcrawler. The girls are now infamous in the MCU. Christine Palmer is Doctor Strange's ex, played by Rachel McAdams. She's a redhead in Multiverse of Madness because in the comic, Christine is a redhead. Claire Temple from Daredevil and Luke Cage and Iron Fist and all the other ones is a mix of Linda Carter and Georgia Jenkins. Played by Rosario Dawson, the writers were originally going to use Linda Carter, but the studio told them they wanted to use her in a movie, so they mixed in some Georgia and changed the name. Rosario Dawson got to kiss Charlie Cox. That's not a fun fact, I'm just stating that because I'm jealous. If you would like to read about the ladies, you can find a one-shot called Night Nurse from 2015. It reprints all 4 issues and Daredevil number 80. Linda Carter, student nurse, can be found online, but kind of pricey. Night nurse is plentiful, but because of the MCU, the prices kind of fluctuate. A side note and a weird fun fact while investigating Night Nurse for today's episode. I found out Dow Comics has a Linda Locke student nurse, also from 1961. That came out in October, while Marvel's one premiered in November. The Dells one was a one-shot, but became other titles such as Nurse Linda Locke and Linda Locke Registered Nurse. The covers are gorgeously painted, and it seems like she solves crimes too. I might pick those up. I have to know what's in them. Tune in next week for some more Lois Lane.
Thank you very much, Becky. And I guess based on what she said there, by proxy, is Roy Thomas a creator of Night Nurse as well?
That could be by the transition, the transitive properties, I guess. I don't know.
That's right.
But I will say she only made one mistake in that whole report. Perfect as usual. But Charlie Cox got to kiss Rosario Dawson, not the other way around.
Okay? All right.
That's all I'm saying.
You know what? I'll say this. I'll kiss them both, and I'll make the determination of who got to kiss who.
That's right. I'll take them both. I'm hardcore, Joe.
Hey, I don't want to say nothing about what you just did there, Todd, but I'm going to.
Go ahead.
I'm going to take you to task for bringing up professional wrestling on this show.
Is that where that's from?
Yes.
Oh, I thought that was about punk rock music. I'm sorry.
No one involved in wrestling likes real punk rock music.
Nobody likes punk, but anyway.
But Night Nurse was not one that was like, you know how like for weeks and months you begged and pleaded Becky to do that issue last week with the Bizarro Flash in it?
Yes, until I wept with joy that she finally did it. Yes, I remember.
Right. The Night Nurse one was officially but unofficially one of my requests.
Was it just a passing reference and she did it for you?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I was like, hey, does Night Nurse count as a romance comic? I don't know. And she goes, that's a great question. I'm going to go investigate. I'm like,
right. Yep.
Okay. And she did, and that's the thing. Becky does thorough investigative research in regards to these comics, and I always bring it up privately and publicly here on the show that she is doing yeoman's work in regards to researching an era of comics, a type of comic that seemingly in 2024, like, never gets talked about, ever. No. And I love that we have it as part of our show, and I am forever indebted to Becky for, like, opening, like, my mind to this sort of stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel like I made Becky in this situation, but, no, I'm with you. I think it is a niche that I don't think anybody else is filling, and it's not only does she do it well, but there's, like, legit enthusiasm in her voice.
Yes.
So it's not like, you know, like oh, I have to do this. Like, she likes these comics. So it's a labor of love, or maybe a labor of romance, Joe.
And then lastly, I just want to mention about the bit where there were advance copies sent out to folks. And that was something that, like, the publishers did back in the day. People who were regular letter writers in, they would mail copies of new books that haven't been published yet out to the regular letter writers.
Yep.
So that they knew they would write a letter about the book, so they could put a letter about the book in, like, whatever, right?
Right. That would be a review of the issue you were reading at the time.
Yeah.
And though I will say this, I don't believe it was an actual copy. They would like, you could buy them on eBay occasionally. And I don't trust them because people could just photocopy them. But they used to photocopy what they were going to do, and that's what they would send. They'd be like, oh, here's a copy, and it was just stapled together or whatever. And they'd have these really cool, like, fonts on the front and everything. Because I know there was a guy at the shop, ask Becky when you see her the next time you're in, or the retailer, that he was a regular letter writer. So he would get those copies, and he brought them to the shop. Maybe he brought them to sell, or he brought them to show. That I don't remember. But he was one who got them. That's the way I remember the way they did it, if that makes any sense.
Right. And to bring it back around to another news story, so when the Gail Simone Uncanny X-Men book comes out and they have the letter page in it, I definitely will be handwriting my letter in the hopes that they send me something in the mail.
Oh, like a no-prize envelope back in the day. Yep.
So let's get into what we read from this past week, Todd. Where would you like to begin?
I would like to start with the book I was looking forward to most, which was New Burn 16, the final issue of Chip Zdarsky and Jacob Phillips' story about this character named New Burn, who was basically, I'll give you the nuts and bolts of it over 16 issues. He was an ex-cop who ends up becoming the police force for the mob in New York City. Basically, it's like, okay, so these wars don't start. It would be like, all right, something happened to this guy who worked for the Yakuza or the Italian mafia, and everybody suspects somebody else in the mob. Look into it and get it, and you just figure out who it is and report to us. So he was doing it to, like, keep them from going to war in the thing. And you kind of find out his love of, like, solving mysteries throughout the book. And that's what the book is about. And you, like, throughout the book, you find out why he did it, how he got involved, how he got, you know, greenlit by the mafia to do this, because that seems like it would be something hard to do. It all makes sense. And it all comes to this issue, which is the final issue. But would I recommend this issue to read to someone? I would say no, not because it's not good, but because it's the epilogue. It's the end of the story where it's like, all right, all these pieces fall into place, and where the people shake out from it, and it takes place over months, or maybe even a year, I forget, because they have time jumps throughout, and it's like, okay, this person showed up, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but they go away because it's not the right fit for what, like, New Burn had set up, so they go their own way, blah, 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 like, this person does this person does that. So it's not satisfying in, like, just trying it, but it's very satisfying for me as someone who read 15 issues, like, cause it's like the true climax of the story is in 15. Like I said, this is the fallout, but as a whole, I cannot recommend enough going to read Chip Zdarsky and Phillips's New Burn as a whole. And I think you would enjoy it, especially if you like detective stories, cause it's an overall story, but with little detective stories thrown in, kind of the way I look at, I can't think of what was the Warren Ellis book, or Sam and Twitch, something like that. Little detective stories with an overarching major story.
Okay. So the first trade is out already. And then the second trade looks like it's collecting everything up to 16.
Right.
Is going to be out at the end of May.
And that should be everything.
Yeah, and that is. The first trade does issues 1 through 8. This one will do 9 through 16. And you know, we have the links. So we always have the links to the, you know, the books that we talk about and the books, that we're looking forward to the following week, but this is something that Image does all the time. You can go and something like New Burn, right? They have the first issue available online free digitally.
Right.
So if you feel this is something that you would be interested in, there is a no catch involved. Read the first issue and hopefully you will enjoy.
Which is like the modern version of the $9.99 Walking Dead, I think. Like, because digital makes it easy to give one issue cheap. You know what I mean? Love it.
So the book I was most looking forward to coming out this week was Zorro Man of the Dead, number 3. Written and drawn by Sean Philip Murphy.
Yep.
Okay.
Alpha Dog.
So I really, this was a book that was kind of like not on my, not on my radar, but definitely not off my radar. I thought it was just a Kickstarter thing. I'm glad that a publisher actually picked it up. Cause I really enjoyed this. You know, it's a kind of modern-esque retelling of Zorro. You know, you have the brother who, you know, and again, I forget the brother's name cause he always says that he's Zorro, right?
Right.
But by this issue, that's already kind of established, and we're getting a bunch of backstory in regards to his sister, Rosa, and how she kind of ended up on the other side of the law. And we get the information for Tomas, who was just a shopkeeper, but it came out at the end of issue 2 that he was like a mercenary as well. Right. And they have their bit together, Rosa and Tomas. We get the bit with the crime family and the crime guy's boss name, I forget right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, them, of course, coming looking for Rosa, for Tomas, for everyone, right? And essentially them burning down the church where everyone was staying. El Rojo, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the film. I'm going through my notes. But this is like kind of everything culminating. And I guess this is only a 4-issue miniseries.
Yeah. Which probably will have more issues, you know, more minis if it does well.
I certainly hope so, because didn't Sean Gordon Murphy buy the rights to Zorro?
Right. To for comic purposes. Yes. But he has the rights. I don't know if you own them or you lease them. You know what I mean? But
gotcha.
So eventually they'll probably go back at some point. I don't think he probably has a lifetime thing on it, but I could be wrong. I don't know. You know.
But that being said, I'm doing a bad job of explaining what this issue is, because this is a Zorro issue that's not so much about Zorro, but it's about all the other people that are involved in what Zorro has caused.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to what El Rojo is doing. As part of being a, you know, essentially like a crime boss on this little Mexican town.
Right.
And, you know, we get like a cliffhanger at the end of the issue, like what's going to happen next. And I don't know, I've really been enjoying this book. Like I said, I feel bad that I'm not doing a great job of explaining it, but
right.
I don't want to give too much away because like there's cool stuff that gets, you know, explained in this.
I agree. The thing I love the most about this is that Diego, the character who thinks or is Zorro,
Diego,
he is played because he has this like people think he has this mental instability that he thinks he's Zorro, and we, you know, like he can't believe it. Is it a gimmick, but it's played off as a joke for like the first 2 issues, especially to his sister. But as now, like all the people, like he rallies the people in this issue, and they love him, if not the symbol, you know what I mean? And it's amazing. And there's a bit, and you know, like we try not to spoil anything, but there's a bit when we finally, the sister comes around and there's that full page splash of her saying like, I believe in Zorro, and it's beautiful. Like, Joe, I'm not in the art game anymore, but if I was,
oh boy,
this page is gorgeous. And it's just so beautifully done. And now we're like, Zorro's a hero, even though he's got the old timey thinking, I'm going to ride a horse and have a sword and run into battle against these guys with machine guns. I'm all for it. I believe he can do it. The only thing I am kind of worried about is that they may be setting up the sister for the long run, if that makes any sense. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm. No spoilers, but I have a thought of what they may or may not do.
Right.
But yeah, so that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around noon Eastern time, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home, however it is, you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out this week. I don't have to slow that down because it's almost rote memory at this point. Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. We are currently tied up at 9 correct guesses each. Let's see what happens this week.
Right. So I go first. I'm looking at your list. I have it narrowed down to 3 things, but I'm going to say it's not Red Chaos number 1. So.
Oh, that's a stop it. I don't know what you're talking about. That typo has been fixed.
Right. Is the book you're looking forward to most, Traveling to Mars 11, the finale of that series?
It is Traveling to Mars number 11, and I think that is also the book that you are most looking forward to coming out this week.
Right. It definitely is.
Any other week, again, I question Jeff Johns's publishing idea to put all 3 of his new books out on the same exact day.
Right.
I don't know. We could have... Instead of doing a Ghost Machine Day, we could have did a Ghost Machine Month.
I agree, but I always heard that it was an old philosophy for comic companies. And I mean, he only has 3 books, so like right now, so don't get me wrong. But the whole point is to push any of the other books off the shelf. Like that was always like DC and Marvel's plan to be like, we fill it up, we smother anybody else. So like the, at least in the G's and the red or the G's and the R's and the E's where these books would fall, maybe they could steal some thunder. That's rack space. If you have a small shop, somebody else isn't getting. So I don't know, maybe it's a thunderous approach to start out, but with 3 books, I'm not sure.
Right. And again, Jeff Johns has been a proven commodity in the world of comics and entertainment. So who am I to argue with him? You know, I'm getting all 3 of the books, right?
Right. I'm only getting 2 of them, but.
Right. I'm giving Rook a try.
Right.
You know, Geiger, I've been on board with since he's been doing it. Redcoat feels as though it ties in a little bit closer to everything that's going on in the Geiger universe. We did that Ghost Machine big one shot back at the beginning of the year. So.
Right, 80-page giant, I believe it was.
Yeah, and Rook Exodus seems like it's tangentially involved. Interesting concept. Not sure if I loved it, but we're going to give it a whirl. See what happens.
Fair enough.
Now, Traveling to Mars 11, Todd.
Yes.
This is the big dookaroo. This is the finale, right? Now, I've had the review copy since last week.
Oh, really? I forgot, yeah.
Sent it to you. I was really thinking about sending it to you and doing it as our review preview book or preview review book for this week, right?
Right.
But I definitely feel as though this is something that, like, you need to enjoy in the printed page, I guess, you know, to get that, you know.
No, I'm with you. And I also feel like I wouldn't want to rush it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I would, like, this, all joking aside. I am so pumped for this book. I haven't been pumped for like an ending of a book in a long, long time like this that I'm probably going to read this as like when I buy it, you know what I'm saying, Joe? As yep. soon as I get my hand on a copy, I'm busting it open.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Now, Mark Russell was just recently a guest on John Suntress's Word Balloon podcast. Promoting, we talked about it last week, Batman Dark Age, which I did read. Obviously, we didn't get a chance to review here. Very different from Superman Space Ace, if that kind of gives you a little bit whatever.
Right, because Space Age was, you know, more of a Silver Age Superman, so I can't imagine that they would feel the same. So
yeah, you know, but I think a lot of people are going to want to pigeonhole them because it's the same exact creative team. The premise, the loose premise of the book, and again, I don't think I'm giving away anything if, you know, Batman, you know, the whole deal. but a maybe going senile Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Is tasked with writing down his memories before he loses them all.
Oh, that's an interesting take.
Yeah. And this is like the story of like, and these books happen like they're technically pre-crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And they happen in quote unquote real time. So there's stuff that's happening in like in his flashbacks as he's remembering stuff. It's the 50s and the 60s and the 70s.
Okay.
And the villains in this are the False Face Gang from the 60s TV show.
Oh my God. That's
right.
A deep cut.
Right. So again, like, it was really good. Definitely check it out. You know, we mentioned, you know, Traveling to Mars. We've been big fans of it. We talked before about how the second trade of New Burn is coming out at the end of May. The full trade of all 11 issues of Traveling to Mars also is coming out at the end of May. So if you've been enjoying us listening to it or talking about it, you want to get it for yourself, get the trade. All 11 issues are coming out at the end of the end of May. You know, I don't know final order cutoff dates or anything else like that. He has a new, is it the new billionaire? No, it's a new, yeah, it's a new Billionaire Island coming out, in May. And then in the summer, he has a Dark Horse book that's coming out. That is a kind of sort of not really biographical story of Buster Keaton.
Oh, I'm a big Buster Keaton fan, by the way.
Right. So shout out to Word Balloon for kind of like getting Mark to talk about all the stuff that he's got coming out here.
Right. And doesn't he have a My Bad coming out? Yeah, he has. I don't know if that's a Billionaire Island, the one you're talking about.
Oh, that's May. You're right. Yeah.
He has a My Bad Escape from Peculiar Island, number one. That's might be where you got thrown off.
That's where it is. And they just had the, what was the dog from Billionaire Island and Acid Chimp had a one shot just a couple
Yes. weeks ago. Yes, they did, which was crazy.
Yes. So, yeah, we're big Mark Russell guys. And like I said, when we get more information, release dates and so forth, in regards to the Dark Horse project, the My Bad stuff, all that sort of stuff, we'll definitely let you know. While you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, and of course the current ongoing Todd and Joe Have Issues, where we are rereading all of Gail Simone's Secret Six. I almost said Birds of Prey, because we're talking about Birds of Prey 104 this week. Love the cover. I wanted to play with it a bit for the post on the website, because I love the cover, that it's kind of like a flip cover.
Right.
That you could have it in your Birds of Prey collection, or you could have it in your Secret Six collection by just turning it upside down, right?
Yep. It's such a nice overhead shot of the art looking down, so it works in that no matter how you have the cover, it works, if you know what I mean. Not just the fonts of the book.
Right. So this is Gail Simone writing, art by Nicola Scott, who would become in the future a regular collaborator with Gail. And before we get into the meat of the issue, the plot and everything else that gets set up, because I have a feeling as though it hit a lot of things for you there, Mr. Todd.
The hair on the back of my neck starting to go up, but go ahead.
Boy, does Nicola Scott draw beautiful people, and as beautiful as everyone is, no one is drawn more beautifully than Catman.
Oh, he's a handsome man.
Yes.
But I'm going to go with Lady Blackhawk, Joe. That gives me the vapors. I'll say that.
So I will say there's a little bit of intrigue to this, because obviously we're reading this from the Secret Six perspective, and it's a Birds of Prey comic. Gail does an admirable job of setting everything up of who these characters are and why these characters are and what their relationship is. And, you know, it's a makeshift team of, Spy Smasher, Huntress, Big Barda, Misfit, Judo Master, you know, and as you mentioned, Lady Blackhawk as well, right?
Right. Maybe some other people show up later, but who knows?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, this is kind of during the time where all of these folks were kind of at Oracle, Barbara Gordon's beck and call, and she would put together a team as need be. And this just happens to be the team that needs to be, as they're off to Azerbaijan. No, not to meet Mr. Azerbaijan. He was too busy at the World's Most Handsome Man contest this year, unless this was the year the mine collapse. Anyway, but they're on their way to stop or to kind of keep an eye on of a a potential arms deal that is going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all the character stuff of the Birds of Prey folks is really good. But like the whole time, I'm like, oh, where are my Secret Six people? But I love the stuff with Big Barda. That it's not a full page shot, but it's like a 2/3 page shot of Barda just leisurely sitting in one of the chairs in the plane, just riddled with bullet holes.
Yeah, in the art world, that's called a 2/3 splash, Joe.
Thank you.
You're welcome,
Mr. Art. Pardon mm-hmm. me.
But that does look beautiful.
Yes.
I will say this, because we're on the Nicola Scott art, and I'm going to stay there for a hot second, is that the beauty in it is they're all gorgeous-looking people, like Catman down to Misfit. You know what I mean? But they all she gives them all individual looks and feel. What's the word I want to look for? Like, the way they handle themselves are like, it goes with their personas. You know what I mean? Like, just look at, like, Big Barda sitting in that chair nonchalantly bleeding out with bullet holes. It's like, eh. Like, but then you also have, like, Misfit looking awkward and Lady Blackhawk kind of like the rugged, grizzled, you know, World War II vet who's still young somehow. But it all works. Their personalities equal their looks, and I absolutely love it.
So you mentioned a great thing, and a lot of it is there's so much character put not into just their faces but also to their body language.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where they a good chunk of the Birds of Prey here go into a big ball. They're all in fancy dress. And Spy Smasher and Lady Blackhawk stay on the plane, and it's two blonde ladies sitting next to each other. Mm-hmm. And you could very easily tell them apart by their hairstyles and their outfits. But even if those weren't, just by their demeanor and posture, it's very clear of who these two characters are. And Nicola Scott's art gets that over in three panels.
And that's one of my favorite scenes in a book of 17 favorite scenes, Joe.
Yes.
Where she's just like, hey, I knew the original Spy Smasher in World War II. And he's like, oh, that's great. I don't think he would have liked you. And there's that, like, and the smug look that she has on her face as she says it reminds me of, like, you know that famous picture of, like, back in the day when you see, like, Jane Mansfield with another one, they were kind of, like, giving him the ick look. I'm like, this feels so pin-up, but in a good way.
Yes.
I don't want to demean it. Like, it's perfect, the look on her face.
Right. So while the Birds of Prey are in here infiltrating the big gala, the big ball, a young man attempts to curry the favor of Huntress, and of course that is our beautiful-looking Catman. And as the pieces are starting to come together, not only is Oracle finding out who these folks are and what their relationship is, telling the rest of the Birds of Prey, and maybe some new readers, because in between the last issue of Secret Six number 6 and this issue, it's been almost a year since these characters have appeared in any other book, right?
Mm-hmm. She does an amazing job of the Secret Six breaking down the Birds of Prey for the reader and the Birds of Prey breaking down the Secret Six for the reader.
Yes.
Like, just like a perfect beginning intro to this book.
Absolutely. I also like the bit, just to throw it out there, while the Secret Six are being shown up, Knockout is exactly that in the green dress, and Scandal is wearing a tuxedo.
That is a gorgeous look also, too. I don't know if I've said this. The book looks really good, Joe.
A fantastic touch, right?
Right. All the while, Ragdoll is stuck outside in the car, just angry, 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 and all he wants to do is drink vodka, which I've been in that situation, Joe.
Right. And of course, as Huntress and Catman are doing their little dance, their waltz, their courtship, maybe Catman lets a little bit more of his animal magnetese take over, and he licks Huntress on the neck.
Yes. Did he bite her ear or something?
No, he licked her on the neck.
Oh, okay. Yes, he said that. I was thinking it was a boxing thing. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes. And obviously, as things are coming to a head, Oracle is trying to tip off the rest of the birds to get them out of there, because one of the Secret Six, of course, is Knockout, who, you know, is an apocalypse warrior. And if you get two apocalypse warriors in the same building together, things probably aren't going to go so well, you know?
Right. Which, you know, I don't know, Joe. They may fight. We'll see.
And it's revealed that the weapons dealer is not so much dealing a weapon per se, but it is a Rocket Red suit.
The first of goosebumps on Todd's arm right now, Joe.
Yes, and very rarely do we sit here and we just read dialogue verbatim from the book, but goodness, I would have to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's revealed, Oracle sees this and says, I don't get it. I've seen the entire schematic for one of those suits online. Dmitry Pushkin, the most famous of the Rocket Reds, died a hero just over a year ago. My heart breaking. That version of the Justice League's been racking up a terrible body count of late. First poor Sweet Ice dying, and then what happened to Sue Dibny. And before she can continue, this is when the fisticuffs begin between Big Barda and Knockout.
Right. Okay. So I say the Rocket Red suit shows up, triggers me from Dmitry, right? And then they talk about Dmitry, and she goes down the list. It was rough because they were beating up Justice League International at this time. They bring up Ice.
I'm going to interrupt you. It's almost as though it was like an editorial mandate.
Oh, don't get me started. So they mention Ice and then Sue Dibny, which... Of the three, the Sue's kind of didn't work for me, but Rocket's death is still one of my favorite deaths of all time. Him in the bubble with the OMAC. I have it saved on my phone of him going, Booster, tell my family I love them. And he just takes out a bunch of the OMACs. I cry at that, and don't even get me started on Ice. Maybe my second favorite female character of all time dying. This issue had me gut it at this point and made me remember why I hated DC at the time. I don't think they could fix that here, Joe, but we'll see.
So the birds get away with the suit. The Secret Six are making a getaway. Oracle calls in some reinforcements in the form of Hawkwoman. I think she's Hawkgirl at this point, right?
At this point, she was Hawkgirl, yes.
Yes. She smashes up the car. And another great bit, Hawkgirl laments smashing up such a nice sports car. And Oracle says, help everyone, help on this mission, and you'll have one waiting for you in your driveway when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
And Hawkgirl's like, really? And I had to write it down, of course. But Oracle says it comes in cranberry, indigo, crimson sunset, and frost. Mm-hmm. Now, this was, this very common thing in the car industry that a mm-hmm. car just can't be red or blue or whatever. Everything's got to have a fancy name for their colors. And I thought this was such a very specific bit that I got such a kick out of it.
Yep. And I will say, too, I don't know if we brought this up about Nicola Scott being a great artist. The bit where they're all in the car and, Knockout's got her knees almost up to her chest because she's in the back seat of this sports car with, a slender reed ragdoll is absolutely fantastic. And then when it crashes and they're getting out of the car and, ragdoll has his foot next to his head and he's, obviously contorted up, which is his business, that is a great visual bit, Joe.
So they notice that the suit is not empty. There might mm-hmm. be something inside the suit, Todd.
Right. They're worried it could be a bomb.
Could be a bomb. It could be anything. What are we going to do? Big Barda says, hey, don't you know who my husband is? I can have this thing opened up in two shakes of a lamb's tail. Mm-hmm. And Todd, I got no problem in spoiling a 17-year-old storyline. To paraphrase one of the greatest line reads in one of the greatest movies of all time. What's in the suit, Todd? What's in the suit?
It's Oracle. It's Ice. It's Tora. Oh, my God. It's Ice. And they set it up earlier to, make me be mad that they killed Ice. And she's in it. Joe, you have no idea. No idea how 2007 Todd popped for this. I went crazy. Now, I knew this was coming in this story, but I forgot it was issue one reveal at the end. So as I'm reading it, I'm like, oh, they got the suit. I think they get it open next issue. And it's the last panel. I'm like, Joe, dust the onions in the Roker house. You know what I mean? Like, I love Ice in that costume. And they're bringing her back. Gail will always be on one of my best people lists for doing this.
I forgot how quick this story moved. I forgot that we get the reveal this quick.
Right.
I thought we would have some time to build up to this.
Nope. My bacon-filled heart wasn't ready, Joe.
So yeah, let's come back next week where we find out what these crazy Duke girls have gotten themselves into. Duke girls, yep. And boys.
Right.
We're going to read, like I said, you know, obviously the way that everything ends up going, we read issue 104 here. We got 105, 106, 107, and then the first two pages of 108. In the next coming weeks, and then we're going to get into the Secret Six main book itself, and then, you know, hopefully when the Omnibus, I think, is supposed to be out end of May. Is a big, like, end of the fiscal end of some sort of quarter, because we got the New Bern thing that we talked about, we got the right. Traveling to Mars thing, and I think the Secret Six Omnibus comes out at the end of May, if not beginning of June. So it's like a lot of stuff jumbled up right there at the end of that month, beginning of the month, you know.
Todd's got some big purchases in May and June. We'll say that.
There you go. So, again, lastly but not leastly, while you're checking things out, of course, if you want to help out the show, you can make any and all of your purchases through our eBay affiliate link. This page contains affiliate links for eBay. We may receive a small commission on purchases you make. You can use this affiliate link at any time you want to buy anything on eBay and support the show at the same time.
Yeah.
And you could also benefit yourself by signing up for our Patreon. As little as $1 a month is going to give you 2 bonus shows a month from Todd and myself. One, previewing the past, where we look at 30 years ago, this month's previews catalog. We're getting ready to record it April 1994 this weekend. We also have our movie show, currently Comic Book Oddities, where we look at the stranger, weirder, off-kiltery, less remembered, maybe rightfully maligned stuff from a pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe. This month, we'll be watching the maybe classic, maybe got to get the hammer out for the toes. Superman 3.
Well, we'll see. And time will tell, regardless.
That's right. Jury's still out. That could be a classic. We just don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
Also, of course, at any Patreon level, you know, any Patreon level, you're going to get the full scans of those previews catalogs that we talk about. You know, expertly done, high-quality scans, of course. $5 level is going to get you those 2 bonus shows 2 weeks before everyone else, and it's going to get you After Dark 2 days before everyone else, so you can listen to the shows in the correct listening order. And we might be having a tease, a test of something going up from the Patreon here in the next couple of days. We shall see. You know, we mentioned before, it's the hardest of hard sells, you know?
Right. After Dark, everybody.
Yes. So I think that's it. Nothing I watched this week. Oh, you know what? I tried to get my wife to watch Peacemaker.
Right.
She feels as though there's a little too much swearing in it.
What? I don't know. I think there was the perfect amount of swearing in Peacemaker.
I jokingly said to her that listening to interviews with Jimmy Pistol, he had said that he had recorded my wife alone in the car. And that is the inspiration for the dialogue. And even Warner told them that they needed to bring it down a little bit.
Wow. Wow.
She didn't find that as funny as my other joke.
What? When you said I do?
No, my goodness. So we're going to tiptoe around this. Remember last week on After Dark, I talked about the problem I was having with my Facebook feed?
Yeah.
Well, I fixed the problem. I finally got all that stuff to go away, so I'm not being inundated with adult content on my Facebook feed.
Jingle physics, got it.
And I jokingly said to my wife that the reason I was getting those videos on my Facebook feed is because I was liking and sharing her videos from the shoe store.
Yes, okay.
And I said, if she puts up another video and I like and share it and those videos come back, It's her fault.
You know what, Joe? If that happens and you scrub your thing again, I'll like and share those videos and fall on that grenade for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But you, Todd, went to go see the new Godzilla X Kong movie. Or is it Kong X Godzilla? I don't know.
It is Godzilla times Kong, the new empire.
Now, have they always been Godzilla times Kong? Or did they recently flip that due to Godzilla's recent new hotness?
No, I think they were always... The Godzilla was first of the movies. Yeah, because it was Godzilla versus Kong in 2021. That's what the name of the movie was.
Now, so. In this Godzilla versus Kong cinematic universe?
Yes, that's what you could call it.
This is like the fifth or sixth movie, right?
Right. Well, I don't know how many there is altogether because there the Jackson King Kong counts. Kong Skull Island counts.
Right, I knew that.
Then there was a couple Godzilla movies of the America, not the Ferris Bueller ones, but the newer. So I'm not sure how many altogether are in that. And then the Godzilla Kong team up movies.
Now, I have two questions. I have several questions, but I have two maybe back to back questions here.
Right.
Are these movies good?
Define good, Joe.
Did you enjoy watching this film?
Yes.
Okay.
Let me give you the three-word review. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can guess it. Big, dumb, fun.
All right.
Listen, they do stuff in this guy. It's not dumber than any of those old Godzilla movies that you watched, like in the 60s, 70s, whatever. That's what it is. It's the plot there is the best way to put it. And then monsters fight. If that's what you're going in to get, you're going to have a blast. And that's what I wanted. I just wanted Kong and Godzilla fighting monsters. And my wish was granted, Joe.
Now, the other question I have is it a culture shock? Is it like a weird shift to see Godzilla minus zero and then see this Godzilla?
Yes. Yes. Not for me, because, or most of the people that I hung out with, especially our retailers, like a big Godzilla fan. We know that like there's a couple of truly great Godzilla movies. Like the first Godzilla movie is really good, even though it's a monster movie. It's really more of like a people thing, like Japan. And Godzilla minus one is really good. Is a great movie, but I think switching gears, seeing one movie and then the other, if you're not a big Godzilla fan, is not going to happen. If that makes any sense, you're going to be wow, this is very ridiculous compared to the other movie.
Now, I say, though, you know, you have to admire the range of Godzilla to give such two different diverse performances in mm-hmm. these two different movies.
Yep, it's Spielberg doing Schindler's List and Jurassic Park in the same year. That's
right.
They already gave Godzilla an Oscar, so Kong's never going to get one. Let's put it that way.
What if they do Kong minus zero? What would that be like?
I would watch it. And I love there was a tweet out. Somebody said Godzilla X Kong, the new empire. And there was the other one, Godzilla minus zero. How come everybody out here trying to make this lizard do math all the time? And Joe, I couldn't stop laughing.
The only clip that I saw from this movie anywhere was somebody posted a scene in the movie where it's just literally a shameless promotion for the new Volkswagen.
Yes, there is a bit of that. Yeah. You didn't get the Marvel Endgame run between Kong and Godzilla, like where they're running at the camera?
I saw some stuff of people like in the giant inflatable Godzilla and King Kong costumes like going to the movie.
Right.
But it wasn't scenes from the movie itself.
There's a scene where, because I'm not going through the whole movie, there's only two or three scenes that I'm going to talk about just because they're great to give you an idea of the movie. At one point, King Kong is in center Earth. That's where he lives. Godzilla's living on the surface. They fought in the first movie and went their separate ways. Godzilla's job is to keep all the other monsters on Earth in check. And he just like punches like a clock. He's like, oh, some monster's messing up the Earth over there. I got to go bust them down. And that's all he does. He walks around, go back in your hole or I'm going to hurt you. And that's funny. And then King Kong just rules the center Earth. So King Kong finds out that like ground collapses and he finds out that there's this race of other apes down there. And he goes to like find them and he finds this kid ape that's kind of his, like who's leading him to the other apes. And the leader's evil and that's the big guy we're going to fight. But there's a great scene where the little ape is a jerk to Kong, like biting him and this and that. And when the other apes come to attack Kong, he just grabs the kid by the legs and uses him as a club to fend them off. Joe, I was crying. And then finally he just throws the kid at one of them and they fall down. And then he's like, take me to where the rest of these apes are. And slowly the little ape wins your feelings over. And it's funny. But that was one of my favorite bits. Later on, Kong gets his arm frostbitten. Mm-hmm. So they were building a Mecha Kong, like Mecha Godzilla from one of the past movies. And the funding ran out. So they gave him a big gauntlet to wear. This metal-like glove that looks like a big gold glove, Joe? There were no stones or gems in it. So he had that on to club other monsters with, right? And then the whole movie had like, you know how like, I said they Jimmy pistoled up Godzilla versus Kong in this movie, where it had all these scenes and then they would drop in a popular song that you would know, but it's not as good as the ones Jimmy Pistol would pick, if that makes any sense.
Gotcha. Jimmy Pistol has better music taste than whoever
but they're all hits. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're all hits, but you're like, they're not as good as the ones like the hits Jimmy picks. Then there's like a wacky looking dude who's a veterinarian, but he's a veterinarian for the monsters. And he's got like a Hawaiian shirt on and he's like, he's the Jimmy Pistol character in the movie, and they really try to Marvel it / Jimmy Pistol it up, and I'm crying. And then later, when Kong and Godzilla finally team up with some other creatures and they run at the other monsters, it's literally just taken from the Endgame run, exactly like it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is hysterical. It's really good. But when Kong comes up out of center Earth to get Godzilla, Godzilla attacks any monsters who are messing things up. So they come up in Cairo near the pyramids. Godzilla's like, I'm going to get him. He shows up and Godzilla sees him and he goes like, basically there's no dialogue. There's no subtitle, but he's like, you. And Kong's like pointing to the portal. Like, we got to go to center Earth. Come with me. And Godzilla wants none of it. And he attacks King Kong, and King Kong, and this is a phrase I want you to tell me what it is, and it's wrestling related. Uh-oh. And I'm only bringing it up because you brought it up in Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Kong goes, backs up and goes, no, 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 and puts his hands up like, don't hurt me. Did you call that the beg off?
Yeah, begging off.
Okay, so Kong begs off Godzilla, right? So Godzilla gets on him and he starts wailing on him and he knocks him into the sand in the thing. And I don't know if he like suplexed him too. So there was like a suplex in this. And then Kong, like, he's standing over Kong after he does it. And Kong reaches down into the sand and throws a handful of sand in his face. And I'm like, what's happening here? I don't want wrestling in my Kong Godzilla movie. But then they team up and go fight the monster at the end. And they win. Spoiler alert.
Gotcha.
And then Godzilla goes back to his new home, the Colosseum in Rome. That's where he lives. He curls up in it. And when he's not fighting, when he's not punching the clock to fight other monsters, he sleeps in the Colosseum. By the way, it's a great movie.
Now, would watching it in high quality footage, but in Spanish language on Twitter be an optimal way to watch this movie?
Yes, because that's all okay. You need to know. There's not much like of a plot. The weird, yeah. There's not. Just go watch the monsters fight, and you'll be fine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because over the weekend, I saw somebody just post the entire movie.
I mean, This isn't Madam Web. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Nothing is, though, really.
No, what can be?
Yeah. All right. Well, I wanted to get your take, your opinion, your feelings, or otherwise on Godzilla X Kong, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, anything else, Joe?
No, I think that's it.
All right, short show.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, thanks everyone for listening. This was episode 704 of Long Box Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe saying we'll see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
You're listening to the soon-to-be-named network, the Lamborghini of podcast networks.
The Rob is a long box hero. The Rob is a long box hero. He gives us five stars.